Okay, thanks, sweetie.
Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. It's Wednesday evening, and I am your host, Lisa Payne Nager. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. It's been a busy week, and next week it is election week. So the primary is August 7th, next Tuesday, so we should have some great wrap-up for you from the election next Wednesday night. I'm so looking forward to the election being over. I'm so tired of this primary season. It's been busy and crazy, and there's been a lot going on, but we're really glad to reach the milestone so that we can look forward to November and be done with this and move forward and hopefully get some candidates in office who are going to help us out a little bit. I hope everybody had an opportunity to go to Chick-fil-A today. It's been a great day for Chick-fil-A and all of the controversy that's been around that. I've had a blast listening to the radio and watching the Twitter feeds today. People have just been inundating Chick-fil-A. Their business is exploding, and it's great news because they've been attacked for taking a stand or having an opinion on the marriage debate. And, you know, heaven forbid you cross the left with their opinions and their agenda. Chick-fil-A was attacked for taking a stand on traditional marriage, and a boycott ensued from the left, which did nothing but absolutely inundate Chick-fil-A with business. As from what I've understood, they have had nothing but standing room only, hour-long waits all day long today. It's been Chick-fil-A Day, people protesting the ban on Chick-fil-A. Another great thing that happened this week was that Ted Cruz was elected to the Texas Senate, I believe. Congratulations to Texas. That's all I can say about that. The grassroots has taken over and put a grassroots candidate in office again. Just like the Indiana race where Lugar was bumped out, we've now got a new grassroots candidate, Ted Cruz, in the state Senate. He won the primary, and they're considering it a huge victory for the Tea Party out there. You know, for the people that think the Tea Party has died, well, you know, guess again. Tea Party's not dead. Tea Party's alive and well, and we hope the Tea Party's alive and well in Missouri when next week. And let's see, what else has gone on this week? If anybody's watching the Olympics, we have been kind of watching it with one eye. I'm not a big Olympics person, but I have been kind of watching it a little bit. We've been enjoying, I was enjoying the swimming last night, and I ran across a story, thanks to Caroline. Hat tip to Caroline for sending this story my way. Go for the gold. The Weekly Standard printed a story today. I was not aware that the Olympians have to pay taxes on the prizes that they win as Olympians. For instance, let's see. I'm quoting the Weekly Standard here. Americans who win a bronze medal pay $2 tax on the medal itself, but the bronze comes with a modest cost, $10,000 as an honorarium for devoting your entire life to being the third best athlete on the planet in your chosen discipline, and the IRS will take $3,500 of that. Also, there are prizes accompanying each medal, $2,500 for gold, $1,500 for silver, and $10,000 for the bronze. Silver medalists owe over $5,300, and the gold medalists owe over $8,900. So the next time you know, if you have an opportunity to congratulate your medal winners and cheer them on to victory, know that they're going to pay a heavy price for dedicating their life to that sport. It's just amazing to me. Something I wanted to make you aware of, as we're all looking forward to the election coming up, there, I posted a story in the forums up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.com under the governor and lieutenant governor. We all should remember the MAMTEC scandal. Last year, MAMTEC with tax credits was a huge scandal. Moberly, Missouri was about to be awarded some huge, huge amounts of money in tax credits, and Governor Nixon was at the bottom of that. And also Peter Kinder played a role in that. So if you have an opportunity to go to the forum boards at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, take a look at those at that article there from Politico and remember what was going on there and who was behind shoveling that money to the right places before you go to the polls on Tuesday. We have a great show for you tonight, Amendment 2 and the Second Amendment. Last week, there was a lot of buzz in the media about the Colorado shootings and what ensued, what could have ensued, how it could have been handled better. Had some conceal and carry permit carriers been sitting in the theater at that time. So I took it upon myself to kind of look around. I'm a conceal and carry permit holder, and I do remember that it was a little strenuous to get my conceal and carry license. Not too bad, but you do have to jump through a few hoops in Missouri. And while I was all too happy to do that, you kind of compare it to the other licenses and things that you have in Missouri, and what the costs are, and what hoops you're asked to jump through. And there's a huge difference. And I posted an article at theculturevigilante.wordpress.com last week about that. And tonight we're fortunate enough to have with us a conceal and carry expert, Paul Bastien of Ultimate Defense here in St. Charles County. Paul runs a firing range and training center, and Paul does conceal and carry training, and the Ultimate Defense does a lot of other training classes. I took my conceal and carry training from Paul at Ultimate Defense. Thanks for being with us tonight, Paul.
Thank you much. I'm very excited to be here.
So, Paul, we'd really like to talk about, there's been a lot of talk since the shooting in Colorado, and just to also mention as a side, gun sales went up 40% the week after the shooting in Colorado. So people are starting to catch on that, conceal and carry is an issue, and it does maybe bring more safety, to be able to be armed, to be able to protect yourself. So you're also a police officer, is that right, Paul?
That's correct, yes. I'm a sergeant with the local police department here.
Okay. So from that standpoint, and from the successful business that you're running here at Ultimate Defense in St. Charles County, how do you see the position of getting a conceal and carry weapon as far as acquiring and maintaining that license for people? I've kind of done a little research on it, and it's not quite as easy as most people would think.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's just a process that if you are dedicated to the process, and the concealed carry permit takes a tremendous amount of responsibility with it. It isn't just a matter of going through that course. It is changing your life to where you are aware of your situation. We encourage people not to live in fear, but we also encourage people that if you're going to make that choice and you're going to carry a loaded firearm on you, you have to have some additional training to be able to responsibly use that gun, to understand what situations to use it in and what understand what situations not to use it in. And I think people have really responded to that. Last week, we did sell a tremendous amount of guns. We actually had a record week as far as sales and firearms and everything else, but what we sold more of than anything else is our advanced training courses and our civilian response to armed confrontation and advanced 1 and 2, where people said, I have the gun, now I need the knowledge on how to use the gun. And it's very encouraging for us because people see that, yes, the concealed carry permit is important. The process of getting the concealed carry is not that prohibitive, but people are taking it farther even than what the state's going to require.
So let's make some comparisons here. To get a conceal and carry permit, The law requires that you do take the class. Is that right?
It is. It is. And the course is kind of a mixture. The state statute kind of dictated to us as to what was going to be required in the course. And there's some stuff that's really good, like justified use of force, and that you have to teach fundamentals of marksmanship and some other areas. But there's some other areas as well, that care and cleaning of handguns is one of those things that particularly sticks with me, that you know, legislators are dictating that we teach. There's a whole lot more important things that I would rather teach people than that care and cleaning. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things where unfortunately it was legislated to us, and so we don't have control over what we're instructing people in.
But you guys are very thorough. I took the class from you. You hit just about every topic that you do. I mean, it goes from care and cleaning to the statutes. And let's talk about the statutes a little bit. As far as what's required, I've lost my web page here, and I can't run down the statute.
Sure.
But there is a long list of here we go. This might be it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can't be a convicted felon. You can't have multiple DWI arrests. You can't have multiple drug possession charges. You can't have a suspicion of mental incompetence in your background. There's actually a clause in there that says the sheriff has the ability to deny a permit just if he believes that you're a threat. You don't even have to have an extensive criminal history. If the sheriff department believes that you are not a responsible enough citizen, he can actually not give you a permit based on that. You've got to be over 21 years unless you're in the military, then you can be 18. And so, yeah, there is a pretty extensive laundry list that you have to pass to even be eligible to get the permit.
Okay. And the original application to get a concealed carry costs $100, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. Our course, the cost is a little bit prohibitive for some people. It's $135 to get the training, and then there's an additional $135 that's involved when you are, I'm sorry, there's, our cost is $135. The sheriff's departments typically will charge $100. And then when you have it placed on a state ID card, typically the license bureau will charge you another $15 for that as well.
Yeah, okay. And then the renewal application is $50 from what I understand, and you renew every 3 years.
That's correct.
Okay. So not to make light of it, because carrying a concealed handgun is a very serious, serious situation. It's definitely to be approached with respect. But when you compare that to getting a driver's license, for example, a driver's license, you take a test, it's a $10 charge, you renew every 6 years. You know, we view driving, and it's not a right, it's a privilege. We view driving as a right. And I would say that I would challenge the fact that it's so prohibitive to get a handgun in Missouri. I kind of question that. You know, not that it should be treated with any less respect than getting any other kind of license. I think driving a car is equally as dangerous in some cases. But why do you think it's so prohibitive to get a handgun license in Missouri?
I think this because people are so intimidated by the fact of a handgun. There's a lot of people that I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a background that was around and surrounded, a hunting background, and we were surrounded by firearms, and it was something that we had a natural respect for. We grew up knowing how to handle those firearms safely and for what they were intended for. When I got married, my wife actually hadn't been around handguns that much, and there was a huge intimidation factor there. She had, you know, basically society's being trained by what they see on television, what they see in the movies, and so she had a huge intimidation factor that after being educated, she got over, and she enjoys shooting sports now. But I think a lot of people just have a tremendous amount of misinformation about the guns. You know, people originally, a lot of people see the firearms, they get into the negative media ads where guns are made to kill people, and, you know, why are these guns, or why do they even allow these in society, and all those things like that. So I think there's just a huge campaign that's been a very successful campaign to put a tremendous amount of intimidation on guns themselves.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the kinds of things that go on at Ultimate Defense, because I know I got my concealed carry permit with you folks, and I have sat in on some of the classes that you guys offer as supplements. You guys go to great lengths to make people comfortable with how to handle and be around handguns, and also never leave that cloud of safety that needs to go along with carrying a handgun.
Absolutely. One of the things that, as a law enforcement officer for the last 15 years, is that I've had the unfortunate occurrence several times of responding to a call where a child has gotten a handgun and have hurt themselves or someone else. So that is just tremendously important to us, is to be able to have the responsibility of being able to secure the gun from both bad guys who would seek to get the gun and children who shouldn't have access to those guns. So that's one of the things that we hit on very, very hard, is the responsibility of owning that firearm and the not sticking it under the underwear drawer or shoving it under the bed or on the top shelf of the closet, actually have a secure storage for that. So we do a tremendous amount on safety, and that goes through all the classes that we offer, not just the concealed carry, but advanced one, advanced two, our civilian response to armed confrontation. We actually do a free course for children that's called Eddie Eagle Program. And the Eddie Eagle Program is a program that we introduce that has kids come up, and we put them through different role play scenarios, and they get a sense of accomplishment, and they know exactly what to do in case they do find a gun, because not all the time are they in our controlled environment. Sometimes they go to neighbor's house or friend's houses, or, you know, I've had pursuits before where I've chased somebody and they've thrown the gun out the window. So the potential of them finding that gun is pretty high. So we do a lot of different programs. All of it is rooted in safety. And then after safety is the survivability of the situation. We teach people how to survive armed confrontation.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we as a culture have been politically corrected out of the handgun mentality. We are afraid of that. And so it would be absolutely, absolutely easy to see why handguns are such a hard thing to kind of get back into the culture. So let me ask you this. As a police officer, and with looking back at the Colorado shooting a couple of weeks ago, how as a police officer do you kind of look at that situation? You know, the argument was, of course, had conceal and carry people been allowed to bring their handguns into the theater, that the situation may not have been so devastating. So as a police officer, how would you look at that?
Absolutely. I mean, the true tragedy of Colorado was not the fact that one guy had four guns. The tragedy was that there was 150 people in that theater that didn't have any. And we hear all kinds, and even on our website and our Facebook page, we've had people that have you know, taken the other side of that and said, oh, somebody in the crowd could have done more damage. Somebody in the crowd could have hit an innocent person. How would that person been able to? There's a lot of misinformation out there, one of them which is that he had body armor on. He had a ballistic nylon carry vest, which does not turn bullets. So anybody, even with a .22 caliber weapon, could have caused enough of a delay in him shooting that somebody could have overtaken him, overpowered him, anything else. It's just, it truly is a tragedy that one person wasn't able to stand up and take that guy out. There's so many scenarios and so many situations, and we post them on our website and on our Facebook, about occurrences where somebody had the potential, just like this guy did, of taking out hundreds or, you know, tens of people and, you know, just really doing a lot of damage, and somebody has stood up and somebody has taken it upon themselves to use lethal force and stop the slaughter, stop the guy from shooting people. As a police officer, I know that my average response time is going to be 3 to 5 minutes. In a 3 to 5 minute period of time, there is a lot of things can happen. You can fire a tremendous amount of rounds in 3 to 5 minutes time, as was shown with this Colorado incident. So as a police officer, and as my fellow police officers who are in the same position that I am, who have wives and mothers and children and things that we want to be able to have protected, we definitely are pro-concealed carry. And it just was a shame that somebody wasn't capable of stopping this guy.
Okay. Well, thank you for being with us tonight. We want to make sure everybody knows about Ultimate Defense. You can go to udrange.com and learn all about Ultimate Defense and all of the great classes and instruction that they have there. They are also a firearms retailer. Is that right, Paul?
That is correct, yep. We sell all kinds of self-defense. We sell handguns. We sell shotguns, rifles. We sell mace products, and we sell training on how to use all that equipment.
Okay, great. Paul Bastien of Ultimate Defense, thanks for being with us tonight. Go to udrange.com and sign up for your conceal and carry defense class with Paul and the great instructors there. Thanks for being with us today, Paul.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it. Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Welcome back to Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're back here tonight with, and we've got Dave on the line with us tonight. He's joined us. We just finished talking to Paul Bastien of Ultimate Defense. And the handgun issue is kind of a tenuous issue. You know, people are divided on it, even in the grassroots community. I know Dave is not a real big handgun proponent. He's very libertarian, very constitutional. But you know, handguns are not really your thing. Is that right, Dave?
Well, yeah. It's not just handguns. I mean, I believe in the Constitution, so I'm going to defend any man's or woman's right to have any weapon they want. And it's not about handguns for me. It's about this whole Second Amendment thing for me. And I've always contended that there's problems with the way these kinds of issues are approached by both the left and the right. I mean, you're just going to quote me the Second Amendment and say Congress has no right to infringe blah blah blah, the right to bear arms, and I'm going to say that to the left, I'm going to say if you want to fix that, then get behind some sort of a constitutional amendment. I don't care how you do it, but that's what the Constitution says right now. And to the right, I'm going to say if you don't agree with me that means I can keep an atomic bomb in my basement, then all you're telling me is that you get to decide where you get to infringe my right to bear arms. If I can't walk down the street with a vest full of hand grenades, then all you're telling me is that you're the one who gets to decide where my right to bear arms starts and stops, and not someone else.
Not sure I really follow that logic, but
well, okay,
you know,
you believe in the Second Amendment.
And I believe that the Second Amendment was put in the Constitution as, you know, your last defense against tyranny. Now,
I
do I believe that everybody should have an atomic bomb? No, I do not. But,
okay,
you know, I think that everybody should be able to have at least what, you know, the militia would have to defend their property. You know,
So you believe everyone should have a single-shot musket, and you get a choice of whether to have a bayonet on the end of it or not?
Oh no! I mean, I think if somebody's going to bust into my house with an automatic machine gun, I ought to have an automatic machine gun. I ought to be able to have an automatic machine gun as well.
Well, okay. So again,
if the Obama administration goes militia on us, and the militia comes in.
Oh, I absolutely agree. The left, and I've always said the left is no different than the right. Each one says I want to be the one to tell you where your right to bear arms stops. Well, according to the Constitution, my right to bear arms stops nowhere. I have a right to bear arms, and the federal government can't do a damn thing about it.
Right.
That's what the Constitution says, and I'm about the Constitution more than anything else in the world. So I can have a Sherman tank.
But you're not a big conceal and carry guy.
I'm not a big conceal and carry guy. I am not, no. But I'm a big Constitution guy, and so I'm all about your right to conceal and carry. Now, I'm afraid of conceal and carry. I mean, I'm a marksman with every weapon in the Air Force inventory, in the military inventory, for that matter. And I don't personally know five people who could hit another human being in that theater at 25 feet.
Uh-huh.
I don't know five people alive who could do that. I'm betting that all of the training in the world does not teach you how, under the stress of someone shooting back at you, to hit another human being with a handgun at 25 feet. Trained policemen can seldom hit another human being at 25 feet with a handgun.
Well, don't you think if somebody was shooting back, it would have been a deterrent?
Not to this guy.
You don't think so?
No.
And some of the people weren't at 25 feet. I mean, you know, they were closer.
Yeah, some of them weren't. Some of them were. I mean, if anything, nothing ought to scare you more than being in that theater. Nothing ought to be scarier to you than being in that theater when that guy walks in with four guns. Determined to kill everybody in the place. I mean, the guy was obviously sociopathic, and he was going to take out as many people as he could, and he,
right,
you know,
so,
and that's all to it. But
you would still defend my right to have a handgun in that theater.
Absolutely, you have the right. You have the right, and I will tell you that. You and I will go to the theater some night together, and you bring your gun, and you're not going to bother me a bit. But I'm scared that I'm going to be sitting in McDonald's someday when a guy pulls a gun out to try to get $40 out of the cash register, which may or may not even be loaded, and the place turns into the OK Corral, because there aren't going to be five people in there. There aren't going to be two people in there of the 10 that have guns that can hit the broadside of a barn under that kind of stress. And I'm in there eating too.
Right. So you think it poses a greater danger than it helps?
I do. But that said, now, I'm about the Constitution, so go get your gun. Go get your gun. I mean, I'm telling you what my fears are with concealed carry. But I am all about the Constitution, so I'm going to die for your right to carry a gun to McDonald's.
All right.
And I'm going to die to protect you from anyone telling you you can't.
Okay. We're hoping that it doesn't come to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that opposing opinion, Dave. We appreciate
sure.
We appreciate that, the ability to hash that out. Okay. We're going to take another really quick break here, and then we're going to come back, and we are going to debate Amendment 2. We've got a Yankee Doodle legislation alert going on. Amendment 2, everybody thinks it's a slam dunk, and I'm sure it'll pass with great margins, but I think it needs some debate and some discussion, so we'll be back right back with that. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
With the August primary looming in about 7 weeks, we find the time is running out on who we vote for. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Do the representatives we send to Jefferson City really care what you think? or do they do the bidding of the special interest groups and lobbyists? It's your choice. You can elect a true citizen legislator or an establishment politician who takes his marching orders from the party elitists and his donors. Either way, time is running out for our state and country. Hear the clock of freedom ticking?
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Okay, we're back, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. Feel free to give us a call tonight. We are going to be discussing Amendment 2. I think it's going to be a pretty hot topic this evening, and probably one that's going to inflame a lot of people because I have a very different opinion of it than a lot of folks do out there. If you're listening out there and you want to call in and give your opinion on it, 347-677-1835 is the number to call in. We have Tom Martz from the Locke & Smith Foundation here to talk with us tonight. Tom and I are pretty much on the same page with this Amendment 2 situation. We're both against Amendment 2, but not against it in principle. And we have Cindy McGee from Show Me Patriots. Cindy is a great patriot and a very good friend of mine, and I'm sure we'll still be very good friends after we debate this issue, because Cindy and I have disagreed on a couple things before, but not too many. And, you know, Cindy can hold her own in a good debate, and she's going to give us the pro side of Amendment 2 tonight. Okay, folks, here we go. Amendment 2, where do we start? This, to me, is Yankee Doodle legislation. This is something that we do not need. We've already got it. It's already covered. I've had this debate with everybody, both of you and a few other people before, and everything I've said is, I'm going to say, I've said before. Let's first clarify, none of us disagree with it in principle. All of us know Christians are being persecuted, no doubt about that, and it's gotten ridiculous. You know, and they do need a way to fight back. I contend that this is not the way to do that. You know, you've got things outlined in the Constitution of Missouri. You've got it outlined in the Constitution of the United States. It's all very clear. My problem with this amendment is that it's not being enforced, and putting more language into the Constitution or into statute is not going to help the matter any. You've got to attack this. At the grassroots, you've got to attack this in the culture, within your churches. Christians have to become strong and fight this on the ground, not within the legislature. What say you, Tom Martz?
Well, one of the things I find rather odd is people just naturally assume that at some point they have given up their right because the state legislature or the judicial branch says so. We are supposed to be a government of, by, and for the people, as declared in the Declaration of Independence. It's spelled out in the Constitution quite plainly, and even in the Missouri Constitution, it specifically states that all men have a natural and indefeasible right to worship Almighty God according to their dictates of their own consciences, that no human authority can control or interfere with the rights of the conscience. Now, some of that has to be taken with common sense. I don't want to see anybody driving down the road at 70 miles an hour and decide to stop in the middle of the interstate because they need to pray. But other than that, if you're going to pray in school, if you're going to pray in public, if you're going to pray in any place that is owned by the taxpayer, and notice I said taxpayer, not government, I have, so do you, so does everybody else, has the constitutional, or actually has the God-given authority to worship God, and government is to protect that. Adding more language to this amendment is opening up a Pandora's box that I believe in 10 years people are going to be looking back on, why did I vote yes on that?
Okay, Cindy, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I think in a lot of ways we really do agree. I mean, I agree with Tom that we have a lot of language that should be protecting our rights, but having said that, let's also visit the idea that the courts have determined what that language means and reinterpreted the original intent both in our national constitution and our state constitution. And I think that what this bill is seeking to do is to strengthen the premises put forth in our state constitution's language, Tom, that will help to solidify and maybe restrict some of the, for example, lawsuits that we see coming forth to try to restrict Christian and other religious activity in our nation that is contradictory to our state and federal constitution. And so I think that, and you know, another thing that I'm concerned about is that, and, you know, honestly, I've got to be honest with everybody here. I always believed that the United States Constitution Bill of Rights applied to both the federal and state government. And I've really had to begin to question that because a lot of patriots and liberty-minded people have pointed out that the states have all the power not given to the federal, which I agree with, but that states have the right to enact laws that would limit us in terms of our constitutionally guaranteed rights. And we've seen that happen. We've seen that happen all across the country, both in state and local municipalities and so forth. And I think that what this bill does is attempts to circumvent that type of abridgment of our God-given and constitutionally guaranteed right to worship.
Okay, I'm going to interject.
Cindy, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When did you give up your rights as an individual?
I didn't. What has happened
when did you sign that piece of paper stating that you no longer had any constitutional rights, that you were giving it to somebody who has a title in front of their name?
I haven't. But, Tom, let's be honest here. The fact of the matter is that whether we like it or not, okay, the United States Supreme Court just ruled on the healthcare freedom or healthcare, Affordable Health Care Act. And what they've done is, in essence, they've given new power to the federal government. Now, I can refuse to pay that tax. I can refuse to go to jail. I can refuse to pay a huge penalty and then go to jail because the IRS will put me there. But the bottom line is that when the courts rule against us because of language they can reinterpret, and they've been doing that with our religious freedoms for decades. And I think that what this bill is doing is trying to take one step forward to strengthen a right that we already have that none of us have given it up. We haven't. I didn't sign up for that. And I'm willing to go to jail to stand up and continue to stand to fight for that right. But if we can do something to strengthen the language within our state, now this isn't, and here's another point. This isn't being done by the federal government. This Amendment 2 is not being proposed by the federal government to strengthen the Constitution stand. What it's being done by is the state to say that in the state of Missouri, this is to further define what we mean by religious freedom. And we've had, for example, one thing that this bill will do is it will give students in our public schools and publicly funded universities the opportunity to opt out of religiously apparent assignments. And that has been infringed in the past and to this present day. It's resulted in multiple court cases and lawsuits that have cost the taxpayers a great deal of money. And
I'm going to challenge you on that one because I know where you stand on education and parental choice and all of those issues. And I know you are a strong advocate of keeping the government out of schools.
Absolutely.
And keeping those decisions in the parents' hands. So if a parent wants their child to opt out, isn't that a decision that should be in a local decision in the local schools? With the parent, between the parent and the school, and that shouldn't be,
Lisa. It still would be. What this does is it empowers the parents and the student to do that.
It takes powers away from the parents because right now the parents are not using the powers that they constitutionally, actually God-given, have. They're just basically allowing government to do it for them.
Okay, let's talk about this issue, okay, for a minute. 50, 60, 70 years ago, if somebody would have brought this issue up, or if a judge in a courtroom would have ruled that you can't have the Constitution somewhere, or if a parent couldn't opt out, you know, couldn't opt their child out. I mean, the culture was completely different back then, and there would have been torches and pitchforks somewhere. You know, people complaining about that kind of thing. Haven't we this isn't a legislative problem. I think this is a problem with what we've allowed to happen to our judiciary. Judges don't need, they don't need more instruction. They don't need more direction or guidance on how to rule, because they would have not put up with this baloney 50 or 60 years ago. The problem is our judiciary has been unmonitored for so long and been able to operate under the cover of darkness for so long and been able to legislate from the bench for so long that we've gotten totally away from expecting our judiciary to follow the Constitution and the common sense principles that it was founded on. In Missouri, Article 7, Sections 1 and 2 allow for the legislature to impeach a judge that does not do their job. There are several, you know, criteria for them to be able to impeach a judge. So if they do not uphold and defend the Constitution, a legislator, the House of Representatives, can impeach judges. Since we have not impeached a judge in Missouri since the Civil War, they've been able to get away with murder, practically, and totally bastardize the constitutions of the state and the federal government. So what I'm contending is that things have gotten so out of hand because the legislature has not monitored the judiciary, and the judiciary has been allowed to morph the Constitution and take out of context and change and interpret the meaning of what we've got written already. What do you guys have to say about that, Tom?
Well, I think there's another thing that you're missing, too, and that's the individual, people. You know, we the people have abdicated our duty, not only on the judiciary, but also in the legislature. If more people would actually ask their legislature, their legislators, where do you get the authority to do this? And I don't care what this is. Most of the time you're going to hear, well, it doesn't say that we can't, therefore, we can. Well, that's the exact opposite way of looking at individual rights from what Madison, Jefferson, and even up to Ezra Taft Benson was making the comments that we control the legislature, we control the judiciary, we've abdicated our duty, now we have to get it back, but we have to get it back without going through the legislature to get it.
Cindy, what do you think about that? I mean, I know that you and I have had these kinds of conversations before. You know, Tom is right. People have abdicated their responsibility, and so has the legislature. I mean, I think that's the reason why we're in the state we're in at this time. What do you think about it?
Well, I agree, and I think that. But I think also that to some extent, people are being given a bum rap, in that. For a long time, our individual voices haven't mattered, period. As much as we've stood up and we've yelled and we've screamed and we've cried and we've written letters and we've shown up to speak to our legislators and written letters, et cetera, which I've been doing for about 30 years now. And for a long time, we've been ignored as individuals because paid lobbyists and a messed up judiciary. You said, at least I agree with everything you said about our judicial system. And, Tom, I really agree with you. We're really in a mess in this country. And I think that, for me, Amendment 2 is a step toward reasserting, because the people will vote on this. This will be the people's voice speaking and saying this further defines. It's not the ultimate definition. We started with a premise that we have our religious liberty to worship as we please, and this further defines that can be taken into the public place. It can be taken into the schools. It can be taken into public settings where taxpayer money is spent. Now, when it comes to individuals, individual businesses, so forth, then you're talking another entire ballpark. But when we're talking about what the taxpayer is funding, that we should have these rights, I think that this bill helps to, or this amendment would help to further define that we as Missourians can stand up and say no when our religious freedoms are being abrogated by a university, by a school, by whatever. And I don't think, and I do think that that does empower parents, because as a parent who had kids in public education 30 years ago, who pulled her children out of public school to private, to homeschool, I tried to exercise my religious freedom rights. I did everything I knew to do. I didn't stand down and just, you know, but just say, okay, you can do whatever you want with my kids. But the bottom line is that we hit brick wall after brick wall after brick wall, and that was on the local level. And so something like this probably would have helped us to make that case and have our children protected.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. Okay, so we get this referendum passed. I'm sure it's going to pass with a huge margin because we love to legislate by referendums here. You know, we have Proposition C, you know, and that got us absolutely nothing. And, you know, every time I think...
This isn't just a referendum, Lisa. This is an amendment to the Missouri Constitution.
Well, I understand that. But still, okay, so let's say okay, it's going to pass. We all probably agree it's going to pass by a huge margin because most people generally do want, you know, to have religious freedom. And we all understand that. We've already got the language in the Constitution that gives us this freedom. You know, whether or not this is subject for debate tonight. So let's say it passes and you get it. Then what? You know, are we still going to have? You know, what then? How are you going to enforce it? You've got a lawsuit in Franklin County right now where someone is suing in federal court over prayers at public meetings. The ACLU is not going to go away. Those things are not going to stop. You know, and how are you going to enforce it? The only way that you can really enforce this is a judicial. We need to clean up the judiciary, and I think
that's
the only real way that you can really clean this mess up. And we can amend the Constitution from now till the cows come home,
right.
But you know, then what?
Right. I think I should shut up and let Tom talk for a while.
Well, when you start codifying into the Constitution of where you can pray,
mm-hmm.
you open up the door for something to come about in the future to state where you can't. And right now we have an unlimited area of where you can practice your God-given rights to worship how you please, how you choose. My fear is at some point, and it's going to come rapidly, when there is a town that is pretty much dominantly, I don't care what the religion is. It can be Wiccan, it can be pagan, it can be Buddhist, it can be Muslim. When those prayers start being echoing in the city halls, it will be the Christians who are going to be the ones who are screaming bloody murder. Because
yes,
they're not thinking about where this takes them.
Yeah, I do. I think the way the constitutions are written now do give you that freedom. It's broader. You know, everyone still does have the right to pray. You know, I think the Christians have just been so polite that they've been steamrolled over for a very long time now. I think the way to combat this issue is for the Christians to become stronger in the culture and start fighting back and stop putting up with the baloney about, you know, no Christmas in the schools and, you know, no Bill of Rights in the hallways at the schools and the public buildings. Start fighting back, you know. And I'm telling you, when these ridiculous lawsuits come up before judges and judges don't rule the way they need to be ruled, then you need to start pushing back with the legislator at your legislature. And impeach a judge. You impeach one judge, and that stuff stops right now. You won't be seeing that happening anymore. You know, these judges are not going to want to be under the kind of scrutiny that will come from the pressure when the people start insisting that they follow the Constitution. Anybody got a comment for that?
Go ahead, Cindy.
I agree with that to a point, Lisa, but the problem is that for how many decades? I mean, you said 50, 60 years ago our culture was different, But it was 50 years ago that I grew up in an America where we had the national anthem, we said the pledge, and we had a prayer every day before when school started over the PA system. Everybody participated, or they could silently stand there and not participate. No, nobody was ever forced to be a part of that, but it was done for those who did want to participate. And I remember when the courts ruled and took the right away from us to be able to pray in our public school system. And so the courts have been ruling against Christians for a very long time. They're not ruling against Muslims, Buddhists, Wiccans. They're ruling against Christians. The rights of other religions are being upheld and protected.
I think that what this
bill is seeking to do is to establish a benchmark to clarify the language in the state of Missouri's constitution to make sure that Christians are protected as well.
Now, didn't that ruling, and I grew up in a time frame, and I know I'm not going to be well liked after this comment, but
okay.
I grew up in a time frame when it was the Christians who were using government to dictate their will, especially under the blue laws, where every business was forced to be closed on Sunday, whether
they were of any religious faith or not. But that was only done, that was done pretty much on local, county by county levels. I mean, I lived in states that had both, some had the blue law, some counties had the blue law and some did not. And so that goes back to your local government. And I do
think, local government doesn't have the authority to implement blue laws.
Yeah, it was a statewide law, I think, at the time.
Pardon?
I think it was statewide at the time.
Yeah, because Pennsylvania was, I grew up in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was a blue law state. And I'm sorry, there is nowhere within any constitution that I can find or look where the state legislature or even my local government has the authority to dictate to me in that fashion. I didn't give up my individual rights. Neither did you, neither did anyone else.
Well, I would have to agree with that a business has the right to determine what they're going to do. I would agree with that. I really would. And I think you both know I would. But I also think that this is where the discussion comes in, okay? Now we're back to my original premise that for too long the state and local authorities have found a way to abridge our constitutionally guaranteed rights to worship as we see fit, to opt out of activities in public education settings and public university settings that we found abhorrent to our Christian faith. And what this law is seeking to do is to say, no, you can't do that. We have these people have the right to opt out. And that hasn't been recognized by our courts, by our state, by our local laws, by our universities, by our public education system. And it's going to be taxpayer funded. We have to make sure that that's protected, and that we don't end up. And Lisa, we do need court reform. I don't think that the problems that we're talking about, I don't think there's a single solution. I don't think Amendment 2 is the silver bullet, but I think it's a step, or could be a step.
Don't we have an aspect of our Constitution that prohibits? I mean, I printed off this Article 1, Section 5 about the religious freedom, but we also have a portion of our Constitution that prohibits anyone from establishing a religion or not. So, I mean, I think it's covered from both ways. So I really think
government is prohibited from establishing a religion. That's a large part of what the First Amendment is about.
Right. Well,
you're correct.
As well. But,
right.
Okay, so I'm with Tom, and I'm worried by injecting more language into the Constitution, I think that opens the door for tightening the noose on issues rather than leaving it broad for everybody to be able to participate. And in my mind, I mean, this is just my one-sided view of this, 50 or 60 years ago, if you would have had a judge rule against the idea that somebody couldn't pray in public, there would have been torches and pitchforks. And I think the reason that you don't have torches and pitchforks now is because we've allowed, Christians especially, have allowed themselves to be pounded into submission, and we've just taken it and allowed, you know, over time we've, our rights have been chipped away at because we've let them be chipped away at. And I think that, well, you know, you don't need to fight this in the legislature. You need to fight this in the culture. You need to make your church community stronger and out in the grassroots area where the people live.
Lisa, we've had a lot of bad laws passed to codify that, and we've had a lot of bad judicial decisions go unchallenged that codify that. And I think that to just say that we can go back 50 years or 60 years and get out our pitchforks and do what we should have done then when this started is probably not – I don't think that we can do that. I wish we could. I mean, I'm ready to take up a pitchfork, quite honestly, but that's neither here nor there. I just think that that we've lost so much ground that to me this is I don't know, perhaps I'm going to say this. I don't have all the answers. I simply don't. And I do not want to do more harm, you know, that we've done enough harm. But I do believe that this is a step to try to codify into Missouri law to strengthen the amendment, what we already have in our Constitution to preserve religious liberty.
Cindy, if there is a school that is 30% Buddhist, mm-hmm. would you be okay if the Buddhist had an opening prayer just like the Christians had an opening prayer?
That's where, when it comes to public tax-funded entities, I should be able to freely choose to remove my tax dollars and my children from that setting and go somewhere else.
Okay, I won't disagree with that aspect. And that's the way the way it needs to work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why we homeschooled our kids.
Right, right. That's why we did.
We're all homeschoolers here. Okay, so wrapping up, Cindy, what's your final word on the subject?
I think that everybody needs to look at this, look at it very seriously, take what Tom said, what Lisa said, what I've said, and at the end of the day, I just hope that everyone will just really pray about this, try to think about this in a constitutional context, and we each of us have to decide whether we believe this is going to strengthen or weaken our state and federal constitution.
Tom?
It's going to pass overwhelmingly. I just hope it doesn't become the boondoggle that I do believe it's going to come within the next 5 to 10 years. And I would hate to see that at some point in time that in a need to think that we needed to do something over and above what we should have done, that we have created a monster that we can't get out of.
Yeah, I hope you're right, Tom.
With you, what I hope to see is...
I just said it!
What I really hope to see is that I hope that Christians don't rely on this as their be-all, end-all, you know, as a solution to the problem. Is stop relying on the legislature to solve your problem. We have a much bigger problem than, you know, what this amendment is or isn't, or, you know, going on in the culture. I think that Christians, I think, need to become a little bit stronger in their own communities and start fighting this and pushing back in other areas. And let's start with the legislature and the judicial system. Yes. So I want to thank Tom. Thank you for being with us tonight. Cindy McGee, thank you so much for being with us. You put us to task on the opposite side, two against one, so I appreciate you taking that stand with us tonight. Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots and Tom Martz of Lock & Smith Foundation. Also wanted to say Lock & Smith Foundation just announced all of their final contestants for their award that they will be giving out, the Lock & Smith Foundation Award, in September. Tom, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
The banquet or the award?
Oh, actually, we're running out of time, but the Lock & Smith banquet is in September, and we'll
September
have you
15th.
Back. September 15th in Springfield. We'll have you back on to talk about that. Thank you both to Cindy and Tom for being with us. Thanks to Paul Bastien of Ultimate Defense. And we will see you next week here on Wednesday evening, 7 p.m., Culture Vigilante. Have a great evening, folks.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.